Marner in over the line, dropping for Matthews, shooting, scores! There it is! Number 40 on the season, and Austin Matthews makes it a 5-2 lead. Holy mackerel, what a season he's had!
1-2, and Andrews has popped it up. Simeon battling the sun, finds it at the last moment, makes the catch, and the Blue Jays will beat the A's for the second day in a row. Four scoreless innings out of the bullpen in relief of Hyunjin Ryu, and Tabby, the Blue Jays are back to two games over the 500 mark.
Pascal brings it across center, on the wing, for the win, it's up, it's off glass, and he misses. And the Toronto Raptors lose by two, now four back of the 10th seed, with only five games remaining.
Goals in 49 games for Austin Matthews. One of the greatest seasons in Toronto Maple Leafs history. Michael Thomas Sigamanis, I'm putting that out there right now. One of the greatest seasons in Toronto Maple Leafs history. I don't want to hear anything about a shortened season, or he didn't play the full 82, or whatever. What this kid has accomplished this year is incredible.
Yeah, I'm shocked. I think 40, to get to that point, it's tough, because I feel like a guy like Matthews feeds off a crowd. There's certain players that play better when there are fans in the building. I think it will all come out. You'll start to hear players talk about it. No one says, oh, I really just couldn't get into the game tonight, or I wasn't up for it because there are no fans. I think Matthews is a guy that feeds off a lot of energy in the building. So the fact that he went out there and generated that himself, the pressure has been on him all year. Can he score, but can he take this team to the top? He's answered that. The Leafs have answered it. First in the division. Matthews is also plus 23 this year. I don't think that can go unnoticed, and I'm not a huge fan of all those stats, but...
Oh, you just wanted to throw that out there.
But I'm going to throw it out because...
Don't come at me with the plus-minus hate.
Well, because his defensive game got better.
Yeah.
And there's no way in denying it. Even if the plus-minus wasn't that high, it's noticeable for me as an ex-player watching him from what he did a year, 2 years ago to this year. And it's harder than people think. It's... When we all talk about, okay, well, Matthews, is he defensively responsible? Does he want to come back in his own end? It's not as simple as, well, he just has to go and work there and want to do it. It isn't that simple. He's got to want to do it, but there's also some skill to playing defense. And if you've been scoring goals your whole life and you come in all of a sudden, you're a two-way player now, or you're better in your own end, that's a player working hard. That's a guy watching video. It's a player going to his coaching staff and saying, what do I need to do in these situations? And then eventually you have to put the work in to do it. But all those things have to come together. And Matthews has done that this year. So yeah, as impressive as the 40 and 49 is, and the 20 plus 23, Matthews has done so many other things to make himself better. And it's made the Leafs better. You need players to have great seasons for the team to have a good season. I've always stressed that. These aren't just numbers. Oh, you know, we're talking about McDavid, 100 points, or Matthews, 40 goals. You need players to have great seasons if you're going to have team success. Matthews has done that. It's translated into the Leafs' success this year. So he was happy when he scored. He's kind of scored the goal and then was like excited for a second. And then, okay, it's whatever, 5-2 now in a nothing game with a couple games to go in the season. You know, I'll tone it down a little bit. But he was pumped.
Well, it's a big win for the Leafs, because if you, as a fan, care about who they face in the first round and you'd prefer that it be the Montreal Canadiens, Montreal walking out with 0 points at the end of the night, which the Leafs controlled last night and can control again tomorrow night, is going to go a long way into helping make that be a sure thing. The Habs have three games left. Winnipeg has four, and Montreal is 2 points behind the Jets as they head into tomorrow night's game, and the Leafs and Habs will play again. And on the Austin front, Ziggy, I mean, now I felt like we were talking about this in January when the season started. we start to bring it back now. Everything you just said is true. And everything you said is true whether the Leafs win zero games in the playoffs or 16 games in the playoffs and hoist the Stanley Cup. If they win zero games in the playoffs, though, there will be an identity crisis and we will be breaking down what went wrong, and we would anticipate that there will be some changes to this team, because after a great regular season, you can't just flame right out in the playoffs. My whole point, in a long-winded way, is to say that everything you've said about Auston Matthews needs to apply in the playoffs. The growth in his game this year, his next step, he doesn't have the C on his jersey, but he is this team's best player, with apologies to the Marner stands out there. He is this team's best player. He plays the most important position up front. He's got to take what he's accomplished in the regular season, translate that into the playoffs. He has the ability to carry this team on his back. Anytime he's out there on the ice, something special can happen, and there will be times in the playoffs when something special does happen. They're going to need him to be at the top of his game if they want to push through this North Division and then be a legitimate contender and consequential team in the Final Four if they get there.
Well, and he's played Matthews has played well in the playoffs. He's had 6 points last year. He had a couple goals in five games. The year before that, remember, five goals in seven games. He's trending in the right way in the playoffs, and I know that's what it's all going to come down to for this team. And I'm not so sure that if it doesn't work in the playoffs that they're going to change things. I think with the way the league is going right now, I think it's going to be tough for general managers to reconstruct their team with the big contracts. I think it's going to be really hard. So I don't think it's as simple as, oh, it didn't happen this year in the playoffs, things have to change, we're breaking up the big four, we're going to move guys around. I don't think it's that simple. The last four games in the season, what are you kind of expecting out of this Leafs team? I think Matthews sits now. I don't know where you're at with resting guys. I know.
I'd sit him tomorrow, to be quite honest with you, Zig, like, because there's one day between these two games. But then you got a couple of games next week that are pretty spaced out. Mm-hmm. I want him back on the ice next week. If they sit him tomorrow, I got no problem with that.
Yeah. A Saturday, Wednesday, Friday is probably the easiest. If you had to pick three games in 6 days, I that'd probably be the easiest part of their schedule. Yeah, I'm okay, sit him. You don't want him, like, if he stops playing today, what's he going to play, the 6th and then the 19th, 13 days off? I don't mind 5 days, okay, six. Depends how Keith does it. Do you simulate a game where you have, do you scrimmage? Like, I've played for coaches where if you had a long layoff, I mean, I played with some coaches. I used to scrimmage the day before games for 10 minutes, which was quite strange, but that's what they wanted to do. So that was a polite way of me saying.
Just trying to picture you on the ice as he's calling everybody together to scrimmage. Well, this is quite strange.
I've had some coaches where we would scrimmage. If you didn't play for like the week, you had, 4 or 5 days off, we'd scrimmage the day before a game. But yeah, I sit Matthews at least one of the three, if not two of the three. And it's not a matter of, it's not for rest. It's for injuries. I don't like playing guys. Like I cringe these games when a guy, I've said this before. I cringe when guys go into the boards, when guys go in for a battle. When a guy goes to take a shot and there's somebody back checking him, is he going to catch him with a blind hit? Like, look what happened to Hyman. Look what happened to Foligno. Foligno, no one even knows where the hit happened or where on the ice did he get hurt. With Hyman, a guy sticking his knee out. Edler, I'm concerned about more players going down. And the reason is you have Foligno out right now, Hyman out right now. Nash, who's been out with the knee injury. So I'm just, any more injuries, it's going to be concerning. Bogosian's out right now. But I don't think we're going to see the playoff roster until the playoffs. And I don't know how you feel about that, but I feel like it can go one way or the other. You might put all the guys together and then it doesn't happen. Or sometimes it's like you don't put the whole roster together. And then it's like, it comes out and they pop. And then it's like, okay, so, you know, what Kyle Dubas and Sheldon Keefe thought of the team and what lines to put together. Then it's like, yeah, our vision of what this team would look like was right. But I think you're rolling the dice when you don't know, when you don't have the whole team together. Like I'd like two games. Like it would be nice to sit Matthews, bring everybody in for the game Saturday, and then have your roster Wednesday, Friday, and play everybody. The only thing then is that you're risking injury. And what would you rather, risk injury or making sure everything's fine-tuned for game one? And they might not even have that luxury. Like Foligno and Hyman might not be back until the 19th.
Right. And you got to feel the roster, right? You got to ice a roster for the final two games of the regular season after tomorrow night. So some guys who are important to this team are going to have to play in these games. I do think you have to play some hockey, Ziggy. Like the playoffs aren't going to start any earlier than, as you said, probably the 19th. And you've got games next week on the 12th, the Wednesday, and the 14th, the Friday. You gotta stay somewhat fresh. And if Foligno's healthy enough to play in Winnipeg next Friday night, season finale, for example, or maybe you want to toss him in against Ottawa if he's ready to go. Again, we don't know. Then you do that. If Zach Hyman, who's been wearing a red jersey at practice, is ready to get into a game, I think absolutely you have got to play him. You've got 4 or 5 days in between the end of next week's regular season and the start of the playoffs. You've got plenty of time to rest. Hopefully you've got your group together and you can get at least a couple of good practices in before game one. But from a momentum point of view, heading into the playoffs, I don't really read anything into any of that because there's enough of a gap. I mean, you just got to come out and play well. The Toronto Maple Leafs are the best team in the North Division. And I know games aren't won on paper, but they should win, and in convincing fashion, their first round playoff series. And maybe that's a bit of recency bias if they end up with Winnipeg because the Jets have been so bad. And the Jets will have to lose more and fall a little bit further in order for the Leafs to be their first-round opponent. I think Montreal, I know they worry you a little bit. To me, that's a...
I feel like I'm the only one.
That's a goal. Goaltending thing, though. If the Leafs get goaltending, they win the series, man. And if the Leafs get goaltending, they should win the series running away.
Just the Canadians, they have like Anderson.
You just think they're going to snap into it?
Toffoli, yeah. They just can't score. I don't know what it is about the team. Kotkaniemi, what hasn't scored in 21 games? He's supposed to be their best offensive player. I know he's a young kid. I think Caulfield changes it a little bit. He gives him a little bit more. Had one, you know, gets one last night. Stahl hasn't done much to give them that boost that I thought they were going to get, that everyone thought they were going to get. So, I mean, Perry's done well this year for them. I think that was a pleasant surprise. But, yeah, they have trouble scoring. They have a good back end. Allen's good, or Price is back. He gets hot at the right time. Like, it wouldn't shock me if the Canadians beat the Leafs in a series. It wouldn't. If those three things come together, and I know it's a lot of ifs and buts, and if this guy comes and plays and shows up and that doesn't really account for anything, the Leafs have it. Like, it's in their hands right now. That's the thing about this Leafs team. It's not like they're going against Boston. It's, oh, wow, what a well-put-together team this year. Or Washington. Or things aren't right and all, they're not fine-tuned for the Leafs. The Leafs are fine-tuned. The Leafs are ready to go. I know they have guys out, but it's in their hands this year. And I don't think the pressure will get to them because of guys like Thornton in the room, Simmons, the Bogosian. I know he's been injured, but just having guys like them around, because the pressure is going to be on them to win, and not just one round. I think everything, anything less of conference finals, is a tough conversation.
Honestly, Ziggy, I think Montreal. I'm good with them playing Montreal in the first round, and I hope it happens because I do think that they will win the series. Number one, number two, and Kyle Dubas, I think, has displayed this type of personality in the front office is got its head together enough that it can be dispassionate about these things. But among the fan base, there will be hell to pay if they, as a heavy favorite, lose a first-round playoff series to the Montreal Canadiens. So to me, with the focus on the historical rivalry, the first time these two teams will have met each other in the playoffs since 1979, which for a lot of us, not all, but for a lot of us, is the first time in our lifetimes, with the fact that the Leafs are clearly on paper the better team, have been playing better hockey right now than the Montreal Canadiens, and have, you know, a close to 80-point season in a 56-game year and could win 35 or so hockey games, the expectation is going to be on this team winning. And if they do, then I think they've cleared a pretty major psychological hurdle. Just because even though I think they're a heavy favorite, there's pressure with that. And given the rivalry, the focus on this series, the fact that it's going to be all anybody's talking about, even in Canadian non-playoff cities, there are Leafs fans and there are Habs fans everywhere. Coast to coast, people will be focused on this series. They get through the first round of the playoffs, and I think it can propel them. And so I think they deal with a huge pressure point right away, and I think that that is a good thing because they should win the series.
And I'm wondering, and a lot of it's going to come down to what Jack Campbell does. This is he's played enough games now where I think you can kind of expect more. Like, this isn't a guy that won 11 in a row and then that's it, right? This is a guy that's come in now and he's settled into the starting position where I feel a little bit more comfortable. Like, with Anderson coming, you know, going and playing in the Marlies yesterday, played 30 minutes, led in a couple goals. He's has his knee injury, and I'm high on Anderson, and I still think he's the number one guy when healthy and going. But at this point, it's changed a little bit for me, obviously. Last game he's played was March 19th. Last regulation win Anderson's had was March 3rd. I know he won against Winnipeg on the 11th, but probably the last good game he played was March 3rd. That's a long time ago.
That is a long time ago.
Yeah, that's a couple months. And then you add in the injury. So it's definitely changed for me where I'm 99% sure that Campbell will start. But it's a guy that hasn't done it before. Like, he hasn't.
The best thing for me about Jack Campbell is there was a dip. There was a dip, and there's been a bounce back. That it wasn't just, he's 11-0, and then it became 12, 13, 14. There was a slight or somewhat significant dip in Jack Campbell's play for a handful of games after the 11-0 start, and he has bounced right back. That I needed to see, that I'm glad I saw, and that gives me more confidence in him, to be quite honest with you, Ziggy. Not that I have any reason to lie about this, but I that gives me far more confidence in Jack Campbell than if this had just been smooth sailing the whole time. We've seen him face a little bit of adversity, and you know that's coming in the playoffs. At some point, that's coming in the playoffs. There's going to be an ugly goal. There could be an ugly goal that costs them a game, and you can only lose three per series or your season's done. It's going to require an immediate bounce back. So I think the fact that he's taken the ball, run with it here, had it consistently, has continued to play at a high level, generally speaking, and bounced back after that brief dip, I think that says a lot about him and where he's at right now, both mentally and physically. I'm confident in him.
He's a guy that hasn't played in the playoffs, though, and I don't know how he, I don't know.
Yeah.
The thing is, it's an unknown.
But you haven't played in the playoffs until you have, right?
Yeah, and he hasn't, and I know we've seen situations like the Murray, Fleury, who's a Grubauer, Holtby, I'm trying to think.
There was Price Halak back in 2010. Yeah. Now, Price was a kid, but that was a story. Price Halak with Montreal a little more than a decade ago.
So it's happened where the starter doesn't play well, the backup, you know, your number two or your 1B comes in. So, I've seen it happen. It's happened before, but I don't think it's going to be Campbell by himself. And I said that a month ago, and I'm sticking with it.
But if he has this, if he lets in a steaming turd in the third period that changes a game and the Leafs lose, are you bouncing right off him back to Anderson?
No, he gets a game. It's gonna have to be two bad games.
Yeah,
one bad game. I'm not sold on it. It depends where the series is at.
But you're saying it really does. If you think Anderson's going to be a factor in all of this and you're giving Campbell two bad games before Freddie's a factor, then you're anticipating a dip with Campbell.
Well, I'm just saying I don't think it's going to be smooth. Like I think the Leafs win their first round four straight? I don't think it's going to be that simple. I'm just saying it's not going to be one goal in the third period where they end up losing a game and it's like, okay, next. I think Campbell has done enough. He's done enough in his time now here with the Leafs where I think you have to give him, I think he's earned the right to stay in net longer than one bad game.
I agree.
In the playoffs.
It's also about perception too. Remember, like Freddie, there were some.
He's 16-2-2. Like, let's.
Well, that's it. Yeah, like, that's huge. Like, I'm not taking anything away. What I'm saying about Freddie, though, is that earlier in the season there was like, just get me a save, pal. A couple of get me a save shots, or maybe more than a couple, went by Freddie. But we were also comparing him to the guy at the other end of the ice. I mean, Connor Hellebuck was almost quite literally standing on his head. Well, why can't we have him? Our team is better than their team, except that guy down there is equalizing things. Why can't our guy just be good and make the saves at the big times? Maybe steal us a save where a goal's gone in, and then we'd beat those guys. So if Carey Price comes back, or if it's Jake Allen or whatever, and Montreal's goaltender stands on his head for the first two games of the series, and we start comparing Jack to that, if Jack's not standing on his head, that's where the pressure's really going to ramp up.
I'm wondering where Freddie's at. I mean, I know he played half a game yesterday.
Two goals on 14 shots. Yeah.
Yeah, and then he'll play. He's going to play another one. I don't think he's going to play two periods. Maybe if he gets really tired, you're not going to throw a guy in after sitting there for two periods. That's just not fair. I'd like to see him in a full game in the minors first. And then, you have to think now that Freddie played half of that, you have to think that he's going to play one more full game with the Marlies, a week of practices with the boys, a couple practices. And then, he's in like Freddie could be in for the last two games. I wouldn't be surprised. Give Campbell that time off. Like you play Campbell again tomorrow. And then he gets the week off to work on his game, fine tune it. We don't know where Campbell's at either. Like Campbell could be still battling his injury, right? He's had the mysterious, we don't know what's wrong, right?
Like if Jack's your game one goaltender, I want him playing a game next week. One of the games next week.
Yeah.
Because you still got a week off after that, right? Or a week without game.
I think it's more important to get Freddie in a couple games than it is to make sure Campbell plays one in the week before the playoffs. Because I still have my reservations on the goaltending situation. I know 16-2-2 is nothing, you know. We don't want to discount the fact this guy's come in and he's done. Like, what happens if the Leafs? What happens if he goes 9-9? What happens if he goes 7-11? What are we doing right now? What if Riddick comes in, can't win a game? Like, say Campbell didn't come in. Like, the Leafs may have not made the playoffs. Like, I really think that's a conversation you have to have. Not that Campbell's good and, oh, how good can he be? No, he came in, and I think he's a big reason why the Leafs have 74 points and are sitting on top of the North. And I know you're going to say, well, the Flames have 47. Like, come on, give your head a shake. They weren't not going to make the playoffs. You don't know. You don't say they can't get a win from a backup. And Anderson's been out this whole time. So I think that says a lot.
16-2-2. I mean, those are hard numbers not to look at and simply not be impressed by. We're getting questions on Twitter or text, I should say text, about why the Leafs have not clinched the top spot in the North Division. Well, Edmonton has 4 games left and are 8 points behind the Leafs. So they can tie, from a points perspective, the Maple Leafs, but that would require the Leafs to lose out in regulation. And in that scenario, Edmonton would end up with more regulation time wins and row wins, the regulation overtime victories. And so they would win the tiebreak as a result of that. All the Leafs have to do is get a point, a game to overtime in any of their final 3 games, and they will clinch the North Division. Gord Stella coming up on the other side. We'll get into the Raptors situation. They lose at home in overtime to Washington last night. Hyunjin Ryu is back. Marcus Semien has a big week in his old home playground as the Jays fight back, split the series with Oakland. There's a George Springer update, and there's some minor league pitching to look forward to. Touch on it all coming up.
Lead off with Ziggy and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
By the way, Ziggy, you can just admit I was right on the over. $250,000 fine for the Nye Rangers, huh?
Wow. $250,000. If you knew you were going to get fined $250,000,
would be
for
a
that.
Lot of swear words. I know what your question is.
Well, if you were Dolan, would you have done it? Like, say you're an owner, you got $5 billion. What does Dolan have? $5 billion or something?
Yeah.
More.
Yeah.
Do you write it still? So if you have $5 billion, you write it?
Of course.
Okay.
To fining James Dolan $250,000 is like fining you or me 10 cents.
Okay.
It's pocket change. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, you would think twice if you have $5 billion in the bank. It's a write-off, Ziggy. It's a write-off.
You don't even know what a write-off is.
No, but they do. And they're the ones writing it off. That's the truth of it.
$250,000. I'm not shocked. I wouldn't have been shocked to see $500,000. I didn't, from the suspensions and fines I've seen, I don't know. I saw 50. Apparently there was 100 from the San Jose Sharks that questioned officiating. I thought people would get fired instead of a fine. And apparently they didn't. Although the timing's very,
very
suspicious.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, let's get Gord Stellick in. He is the co-host with Nick Elberga of Leafs Nation pre and post here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Seinfeld references, a little New York Rangers talk, Gord. We'll shelve those two things unless you want to jump in and start with the Leafs, because the lead story here is Auston Matthews, 40 goals in 49 games played this season. I think when you factor in that Auston, as reported, had COVID, when you factor in the challenges, I would imagine, of being out of your normal routine in a pandemic season with, you know, a lot of boredom in between games and all of it, to stay as focused as he has and to accomplish what he has accomplished this year says a lot about this guy. And effectively prorating everything, given the injuries he had in the second and third years of his career, the Toronto Maple Leafs have a 5-time 40-goal scorer in his first 5 seasons in the NHL. It's incredible.
Really is. And, you know, it's something last year. It's like when COVID hit, we kind of forgot everything. Like, oh, yeah, the Boston Bruins won the President's Trophy. There's some criticism or skeptics say, well, wait, he's doing this in the Canadian division. No, this started last year. He was in a 3-way battle with David Pastrnak and Alexander Ovechkin for the Rocket Richard Trophy, which he's going to win this year. And, you know, it came down to, it's funny, with all the Mike Babcock controversies about some other things, Sheldon Keefe came in and said, my new team, the Toronto Maple Leafs, are in a deep hole. Why don't I play Auston Matthews more? Why don't I put Mitch Marner on his wing more? Common sense things. Auston Matthews, since Sheldon Keefe's come on board, is scoring at like a 65-goal clip, okay? And that's against all NHL teams. That's phenomenal, especially in the 2021 era.
And now the conversation is going to be, Gord, like, I know it's not just Matthews, but now that he has his 40, I don't think it was talked about in the room, but if I'm Sheldon Keefe and the coaching staff, I say, well, I want to keep playing him. I want to keep putting him in the games. Want to dress him. It'd be nice for him to get 40 in a shortened season. Does he sit out the rest of the season now? Does he get in one, maybe two? How do you think he himself and Keefe and the organization approaches his load management going forward?
Well, you know, we talked about this last time, Ziggy, and that I just look at the young guys that you play them. Like, you play them. Like, I think load management for a younger player, you can roll four lines so they get less ice time that way. If you're banged up, and that's a caveat you and I discussed last time, that's a whole different matter and you need some time off. But, you know, there's a possible dilemma. I got to believe they're going to figure something out. But right now, the way the season's going to end, you've got Calgary, Vancouver playing three useless games in 4 days against each other to make up the whole COVID situation in Vancouver. And right now, as of now, they're saying the Canadian Division playoffs are going to start a little bit later than the other ones. Well, you know, you've had a most compressed season, and then all of a sudden you could be looking at significant time off before you start the playoffs. Now, that's great if you're Foligno or you're Zach Hyman or you're Bogosian and you need the time, but, you know, I would worry a bit about getting out of sync. And so I think even more so, you want to keep the guys playing right now because tentatively they could get a whole lot more time than normal before the playoffs start.
With Gord Stellick on leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, if you were, and Freddie Anderson gave up two goals on 14 shots for the Marlies in half a game yesterday, if you were Kyle Dubas, Sheldon Keefe, how would you roll out your starting goaltending at the NHL level over the next three games, the final three games of the regular season?
Yeah, well, I mean, Freddie, you're giving him 30 minutes now. Do you give him 40 minutes at the AHL next? I mean, it's he's kind of a separate matter out there. I thought at one point if he had a couple of quality NHL starts, I would look at maybe have thinking about playing him in game number one out of loyalty or whatever you want to call it in the playoffs. But, you know, right now he's just going to try to figure it out. I believe that would mean he gets in one game for the Toronto Maple Leafs. But otherwise right now you can put Riddick in a bit. You can basically alternate them the rest of the way. Jack Campbell's going to be your guy in game number one. He's just got to be. There's no way Freddie Anderson will be close to 100% health to do that, nor get the prerequisite number of games or experience and otherwise. So, you know, now again, you don't need to ride Campbell all the way. It's just, you can see the finish line, but wouldn't be bad to give Riddick a game or two.
Yeah, I think it's important to get Riddick in some games because you don't know. I told Scotty, I think all three of them play. I know that's kind of crazy, but with Anderson going to the Marlies, looks like he's back on his feet. Does Campbell, the fact that he hasn't played a playoff game, Gord, at the NHL level, does that concern you at all? Or do you think that could leave a door open for Anderson, Riddick to get some games in?
Yeah, it's funny too. You remember one time when the Penguins won Stanley Cup, Jeff Zatkoff actually played. They had a number three goaltender, played a little bit of playoff hockey with Matt Murray and Marc-Andre Fleury. But to answer your question, I'm not worried. He really has embraced this challenge. I mean, Jack Campbell was got for a pretty modest price pre-trade deadline back in 2020 because it just had not happened for him as a number one goaltender in the NHL. And good on him. He made it happen. And, you know, really, of late, the last playoffs, as much as we love Freddie, we talk about it, he had his most ordinary hockey in the playoffs, just like a lot of players did on the Maple Leaf team and just as a team they did. So it's not like goaltending. Goaltending was never a factor in any of the playoffs. It was more Tuukka Rask or somebody else that was the difference. So I'm willing to see what Jack Campbell can do and have all the faith in him. The big part this time is you have some alternatives, which really it was Freddie Anderson or bust the last couple of years.
Well, 519 number has texted us to 590-590, Gord, and it's a little lengthy, but I'll read it. Sports, unfortunately, is not a what have you done for me in the past, but a what have you done for me lately kind of industry. With that being said, the team is Campbell's now, no longer Anderson's. I'm not saying kick Anderson to the curb, but I'm no longer hitching this team to his wagon. This is Campbell's playoff to win or lose. He deserves it. And then a 647 number, Trevor up in Orangeville. asking, with the way Campbell has played for the Leafs, would you allow Anderson to walk in free agency and be comfortable with Campbell as your starter for next year? I think the answer to that question cannot be given at this moment. But I do understand the what have you done for me lately sentiment, which leads me to ask you about a topic Ziggy and I were discussing in the first segment of the show, which is how long is the leash for Campbell in a playoff series where you can only lose three times in a series or you're going home?
Well, yeah, no question. The leash, would I say short or mid? I don't know, but something like that. It's like you don't ever want to tell someone they're on a short leash. And you're kind of saying, well, I mean, that's a negative vibe that way. I just think the understanding is you have some depth. And, hey, you remember Philip Grubauer started two games for the Washington Capitals when they won the Stanley Cup. Then Braden Holtby took the cage back. So I look at that kind of similar system. So in there, you know, they got down 0-2. I don't know if I would think if you're going to, whoever your goaltender is, you got to give them two games anyway, unless the first game's a total disaster, and then you hope you can ride them from there. But it's true about sports. You were just talking about the New York Rangers. What have you done for me lately? And the owner there didn't feel the rebuild was being done soon enough, even though we may feel. Of course, the Vegas Golden Knights have changed a lot of owners' attitudes about how long a rebuild can be done, right? So it is true. It's all about what have you done for me lately. It's Jack Campbell's cage for now, but hopefully it's all through the playoffs because that's the ideal playoffs. You have a goaltender that runs it and plays the whole way and plays that well that you have success. So we shall see what gives. But, yeah, right now it'd be great if Jack Campbell has it. It's his to lose, and he takes it for a long run.
With Hyman and Foligno out of the lineup with injuries, throw Nash in there as well. We really don't know what the forward group's going to look like, right? And I know Thornton looked great with Matthews and Marner last night. I think Galchenyuk's been excellent here. He's exceeded all expectations. I know he had a 3 or 4 game lull, but that's to be expected of a guy that's his career's been turbulent, to say the least, the last 3-4 years. How do you see the left side shaking out right now? Has it changed for you? Is Galchenyuk a guarantee for you game one? What do you think is going to happen with Thornton? Just curious your thoughts on the top two in that left side.
Yeah, and Ziggy, this is kind of like your Pittsburgh experience when you have a lot of depth, and certainly Sheldon Keefe's trying all the different things, and you don't want Zach Hyman injured, you don't want Foligno injured, but it gives you a chance to put other guys in the lineup. So maybe that's a bit of a silver lining as he gets to explore it. Joe Thornton's on a point of game streak again, 7 games or something. I mean, there's all that flexibility. He's kind of the guy, the malleable guy that could be the left winger on the first line, and maybe that's what happens if Zach Hyman's not back. That's what happens. If Zach Hyman is back, well, then you've got your two lines pretty well set. But I do agree with you, Ziggy, that Galchenyuk, he's showing he's kind of streaky, but right now he's back to being on that kind of hot streak. And that's been a little bit of a diamond in the rough. So I would see him getting that nod. And let's hope the injured guys, as many of them, are back as soon as possible.
We'll talk next week, Gord. And, of course, look forward to tomorrow night's tilt with Montreal. Always fun.
Have a great weekend, guys. Sounds great.
You bet. Gord Stellick, a co-host of Leafs Nation Pre and Post with Nick Elberga here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. 7 o'clock hour, Hugh jumps in for the panel chat. Shai Davidi at 7:35. The high performance department coming into question for the Blue Jays in the aftermath of the George Springer situation, all the pitching injuries. David Phelps is the latest to go on the injured list. I think a lot of this has to do with the shortened season last year and the ramp back up. We'll see what Shai has dug up on that front. There are some names down in the minor leagues off to big time starts, including a pitcher that we may see at the big league level this year at some point. And did the LA Angels do dirty by Albert Pujols? We'll debate that in a moment.
Lead off with Ziggy and Scotty Mack on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
You will jump in at the top of the hour and we'll get into Leafs Habs and Austin Matthews and the impending first-round playoff series, it would appear, and the George Springer situation with the Blue Jays, did you see, Ziggy, that the Los Angeles Angels, in the final year of his contract, designated Albert Pujols for assignment? So yeah. He's gonzo. He's released or will be released because he obviously will not be picked up on waivers. He's got a $25 million salary for this year. 10th and final year of the contract he signed with the Angels before the 2012 season. This is a first ballot, as they like to say, inner circle Hall of Famer, more than 600 career home runs. The Angels release Albert Pujols. He doesn't go out on his own terms. But here's the thing. He hasn't been a good hitter since 2016.
It's turned into a terrible contract. I don't know how else to put it. Like, are you kidding me? Making $30 million now? But you got to remember that they told him, the Angels told him that he was going to have his time scaled back, right? So it's not a total surprise. I think they finally released him because apparently when they're playing against the Rays and he got sat and he apparently wasn't happy. And who knows what he said to the team, right? And that wasn't from Joe Maddon. That was from up top, okay? So not from the manager. That's coming from up top. That's coming from management. So you know that something's in the works. I think the fact that you have Otani, the way he's hitting.
Awesome.
Yeah.
He is so fun. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't know. So is Pujols going to play it first? Is he going to DH? Like, if it's Otani's in, like, what are you going to do
with
Pujols
now? He's not hitting enough. Well, yeah, Otani's your DH on days he's not pitching. But Pujols is not hitting enough to even make it worth your while to play him. And they got this Jared Walsh kid. He's a left-handed hitter, but they got Jared Walsh playing first base for them.
Still five homers this year. Like, still five homers.
The thought that I have, Zig, is like, there are certain guys. Now, if you look at Albert Pujols, it's really been the story of two careers. And Albert Pujols, to me, is the prime reason. There are others, but is the prime reason why you will never see a great player enter free agency in his early 30s and get an 8 to a 10 year contract again. Because you're not getting the best of that guy. His best comes in his 20s and his early 30s. And we're not living in 1998 anymore where you can jack yourself up with steroids and perform at 43 like you're 23. And if you look at his career, his time in St. Louis is inner circle, first ballot Hall of Fame worthy. His time in Los Angeles with the Angels since 2012 is good. And so it's his time in St. Louis. He's really in Los Angeles just been adding to the numbers, right? And putting himself into that special rung, 600 plus home runs, etc. He has not been a good hitter since 2016. And even in 2016, he wasn't great. He was good. So they got to move past him, and I just wonder, though, he's been a class act. He's a highly popular guy. He's been a good ambassador for the game, a wonderful player, if he's not owed just that little bit more.
I saw him play in St. Louis in 2007. I mean, he was
a great player.
Probably one of the best, if not the best hitter in the game at that point, hitting .327 then.
Yeah.
I just remember.
Not to be too specific. Oh yeah, hitting .327. Yeah,
no, it was good. It was a good year for him.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you want, how you want to describe his career? I mean, once players sign those big contracts, that last contract, how many of them end up like? How many guys end up going the right way? For me, for Pujols though, how do you not just keep him around the room? Like, he's gonna be gone. Like what? They're gonna buy him out and then he's done. It's just that. It's a sad way for a player that good to go out. And I know there's no good way for these things to end, but don't you think baseball more than any other sport just hide a guy and keep him in? Or is it just a bad vibe around the room when you have a Hall of Famer there? Like, maybe he got so mad when he got benched against the Rays. We're like, okay, we can't have him around now.
Well, he hardly appeared in that 4-game series against the Blue Jays in Dunedin earlier in the season.
Yeah. You know,
two guys have been paid out heavy to walk away so far this year. Albert Pujols. Albert Pujols just got Tanner Roark'd.
Roark's been getting his tits lit.
It just, honestly, baseball's like this. If you want to bury a guy in your team and keep him on your roster, is there any better sport than baseball? Just throw him in the bullpen. Have him
catch. Yeah, all right. Albert Pujols, bullpen catcher. Guy's made $500 million in his career. Highly doubt that'll ever
something.
Happen. All right, Will. Not that it's formally this way, but it is essentially this way. All that's left is the math. We'll tie a bow on the Raptors' season that was after their overtime loss to the Wizards. The Leafs beat the Canadiens last night. Austin's 40th goal and the Toronto Blue Jays' handling of the George Springer situation. Did Ross Atkins offer some kind of mea culpa? John Torrey's doing a lot of hits on breakfast television these days, right? Talking about the pandemic and how Toronto's handling things and all that. You think you could rock the John Torrey haircut? Hugh or Ziggy, how long would it take you to grow that thing out and pull the comb over to get that thick, luscious look that John Torrey is rocking right now?
You never know how thick it is. You got to see somebody in person. Yeah. Look at Elliot Friedman. He looks like he's got a lot of hair. I think if we take a little peek behind the curtain, I don't think it's as lush as we think.
Silent Vic,
he's poofing it up.
Guess who's on an hour from now, Silent Vic, and who needs to hear that clip to be able to come to his own defense?
You brought it up. What do you want me to do? I thought you said Elliot Friedman.
Ziggy.
Elliot Friedman and John Torrey. Those two words sound the same. Those names sound the same. Yeah, no question.
Yeah.
Just get him out hatless in a windstorm and see what's really going on.
I am kind of curious, though, what I'd look like with a full head of hair. Just ridiculous, I'm sure.
I think there's got to come a point, Hugh, maybe 25, 30 years from now. We'll come visit you wherever you are, promise.
Sure.
Just let the sides out and rock the comb over. Like, who cares at that point? You're not trying to impress anybody.
I barely care now.
Yeah. You're not trying to impress anybody. Yeah. Just bring back the comb over.
Like the Kim Mitchell look. Remember, he had the ball cap and just the long flowing hair.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Here's Austin Matthews on scoring 40 goals in 49 games. He's very, 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 very excited about it.
It means a lot. I play with some really, really special players. And, obviously, we've had a really, really good season so far. So, I just feel really, really fortunate. And, it's a team sport. So there's a lot that goes into it.
So the guy's got every reason to brag, every reason to be loud. But, Ziggy, when I listen to Austin talk, and I don't think this is actually going through his mind at the time, but the focus is on bigger and better things. This is another terrific regular season accomplishment for a guy who I will continue to insist is a 5-time 40-goal scorer. If you prorate his sub-40-goal seasons over a full 82, missed 13 to 15 games due to injury in his second season and in his third season. So you prorate that, his goal totals, he's north of 40. He's really a 5-time 40-goal scorer. But he knows now, this and a nickel will get you jack what if you don't roll through a couple of playoff rounds here. It's time for this team to take the next step. They're poised to do so.
Yeah, it says even more about the 40 he had this year. You got to think that it's not only the media, it's friends, family, when you talk about what you're doing with the Leafs, it's all about, what's going to happen in the playoffs, right? And I think as a player, you have that in the back of your mind, right? You've done it in the regular season, but can you do it in the playoffs? And that just says a lot about them. Sometimes that really like handcuffs players where when it's always like, well, you're a great regular season player, but once the playoffs come, what have you done? What have you done for this Leafs team? And I think Matthews is going to have to answer that call this year. I think all eyes are on him. Obviously Tavares is the captain and we expect a lot out of Nylander and Marner, but it's going to come down to what the big man does. And I think he can he's dominated games and he's done it in the playoffs too. Like I said, he had 5 goals in 7 games a couple years ago. Can he win the series? That's, you know, I feel like I've talked about that every single playoffs with the Leafs, right? In Austin, it's, can he take the team on the back and really push this team through? Cause I think once they get on a run, once they get past the first round, you don't know what can happen. And I know they haven't gotten past the first round the last 4 years. Once that happens, you don't know if the Leafs could have gone to a Stanley Cup final the last 4 years. It's like, oh, well, they can't get by the Bruins. That's the one team. That might be the one team they can't beat. Look at the history of the Stanley Cup playoffs and how many Stanley Cups were awarded to teams where you're like, oh, wow, that Penguins team was really good. Or that Islanders team was really good. That Maple Leafs team, wow, if they could have got by the Bruins or didn't get matched up with the Bruins, who knows what they could have done. I think the Leafs, you can throw them in that conversation. Because once they do win a first round, I think it's going to be a dangerous team.
So Auston Matthews has 198 goals in his career, 2 away from 200. That's a .598 goals per game average. Now, the all-time leader, I love stats. I was looking up some stats. You guys know I'm a big analytics guy. No, not at all. Mike Bossy's the all-time goals per game leader with staggering .76 goals a game. Matthews, .59. You know what else who's .59 or .6? Wayne Gretzky. Right now, Alex Ovechkin is .61. So that's the kind of pace that he is on. That's how special a player he is. And we're seeing that. I said this the other day, I think he is past Alex Ovechkin as the game's most natural scorer. It just seems that every time he has the puck and he has that quick release and he has that little inside move where he uses the defenseman as a screen and that release is so fast. He's the most dominant scorer.
He's got the hand-eye stuff.
Yeah,
it's
unbelievable.
The number of goals he scores that are unique.
Yeah.
Where you go, maybe I've seen that before, but then again, I'm not quite sure I have.
Yeah.
Like the one around Suzuki a week or so ago.
Took it off the guy's knee and then just it landed.
It's special. And he understands he's got to take the next step and the Maple Leafs have to go deep into the playoffs. But I feel comfortable saying that it's obviously going to be important. 3 years from now, we'll be in a hefty panic if he hasn't signed a long-term contract extension to remain a Maple Leaf. But if he does, and then again, maybe even if he doesn't,
yeah,
this is a unique talent to have played in this team's uniform. And you can go through any era. I sit down with my dad and he'll talk about Davey Keon, right? Or Daryl Sittler, who he watched and enjoyed through his 20s in the 70s. Rick Five was a 3-time 50-goal scorer for this team. My age cohort remembers the Dougie Gilmore years and how special those were. Matt Dave Sundin. Andrechuk finished a 50-goal season here and then had a 50-goal season here, 92, 93, 93, 94. Like a lot of special players, Matt Sundin have rolled through this town. There's nothing like this guy. Nothing like this guy. And he's not even 24 years old.
That's the scary part for the rest of the league. He's still got 10 years of his prime ahead of him. And he's big too. We forget that because he's such a great goal scorer. This guy is dominant on the puck. He's hard to get the puck from. He's also really good at getting the puck, of being physical and forcing other players off the puck and whether it be just hard on their stick or taking the body. He is a physical player. I don't think he's going to fight anybody, but he doesn't have to. Right, Zig?
Yeah, well, the thing that you need to look at, he's all that, Hugh. When you look at the 40 and 49, something else, and I always look at this with point leaders on teams, right? We talk about McKinnon on Colorado and the point differential from your top guys, and you always look to see, well, who's next on that team? And I think if you look league-wide, for goals. Like, who's second in goals? It's McDavid with 31. So he's got a 9-goal lead on the second place. And then after McDavid, yeah, there's a 29, couple 29s, couple 28s and 27. Like, everyone kind of falls in order and it's kind of tight. He's really separated himself from the rest of the NHL. So I think that's obviously the 40s huge in a 56 game year. He had COVID, you know, seemed like he was battling injuries at time, had some nagging things, and he still found a way to get there. And not only did he get there, it's that he lapped the NHL.
And he got there in less than 50 games.
Yeah.
All right. 40 and 49 with three games left to play, however many he appears in.
But he lapped. I'd consider that a lapping in the NHL. When you have 40 and everyone else has 30 or below 30, one guy only, I think that is, you just lapped the NHL. So it's impressive. Yeah. It's not like he's in a tight race. You know, he has four or five guys within a goal of him. He really separated himself this year and under tough circumstances as well. I hate putting expectations on players and especially this high, but you know, we talked about before the season was 35. I think 35 would have been a nice number to get to. And it looks like 35 would have won the goal scoring title with 35. It looks like that's going to get it done. But now 40, I mean, he could get to 45 now. Like, what's he thinking? What if he goes in and says, I'm not sitting out any games. I want to see if I can get to 45 when the season's over. You don't know.
And we'll definitely be previewing next season later in the fall or later in the summer, early in the fall, and we'll be saying, can this guy score, well, 50, obviously, but can this guy get to 60? I think that would be the benchmark, because if you prorate his pace over 82, he'd get there. Here's Ross Atkins addressing the media yesterday on the George Springer quadriceps, a quad dominant athlete situation.
You know, I think there's the obvious one where you can just say, should we have taken more time? And what I would tell you is that as we are trying to compete and trying to win, if we have objective reasons to take the next step and put him in a position to make our team better, then we're always going to do that. So having said that, we're going to continue to revisit that process with George, with our medical staff, with our coaching staff, and learn how we can improve upon it. And if there's a way to be better, we want to be that.
So the problem with muscle strains is that they can be aggravated again, right? They can be made worse if you try to come back from them too soon. I don't care if this isn't a popular opinion. If George Springer felt up to it, I find that sports teams quite rightly err on the side of caution these days. I have a hard time wanting to hammer the Blue Jays for getting George Springer back into the lineup. They thought they were doing it responsibly. They thought that by keeping him out of the outfield, they were limiting his movements. Like, he'd have to run out a ground ball, or if you single, you're a base runner, or if you're legging out a double, or whatever the case may be. And you look at George Springer's performance before he aggravated the issue. I mean, he was hitting bombs. He hit a 470-foot home run, his second home run of the day, on Saturday last week against Atlanta. Like, whatever was going on with that leg wasn't affecting him in that moment. So you learn a lesson here. Ross Atkins went on to say that they will absolutely make sure George Springer is ready to return before he is back out on the field or in the starting lineup for them. But I just am not going to fault this team for trying to get George Springer out onto the field. And obviously it was something he wanted to do. This is a guy under a new contract. As Ross said, they're trying to compete. Maybe they hedged a little bit. They're paying a price for it. Maybe they got a little aggressive. I don't have a problem with it.
No, and you talk about Springer wanting to go and saying he's good to go. Well, sometimes management has to protect the player from him or herself, right? And
like, it's easy to see that everybody would be eager here.
Sure.
This is your prime.
He wants to play. And Jays fans should want him to want to play, and it's great. But man, oh man, they have to be cautious with him now. And it was cryptic what Atkins was saying yesterday about how he expects it to be longer than just the 10 days.
It has to think.
He's eligible to come back next Thursday.
That's right. So but you also
expect him in the lineup next Thursday.
But doesn't that sound better? I expect it to. Why don't you under-promise and potentially over-deliver? So that if he comes back next Thursday, everybody will be like, well, they certainly have learned a lesson here. They wouldn't be putting him back into the lineup, activating him today if he wasn't ready. This is great news. As opposed to saying, no, we expect this will be really close to the 10-day deal, and then he'll be back. And then if he misses another 2 weeks, people are going to start asking questions. What the hell's really going on here?
And I'm sure you guys are going to ask Shai about this when he's on, but are we into another situation like we had with Josh Donaldson a few years back where the training staff and the methods used to rehab players are being called into question?
Well, that's fine, except look at Josh Donaldson's history since he left Toronto.
Yeah.
This guy was limping into second base on an opening day double for the Twins this year on the same calf that has been bothering him since, to my knowledge, at the very most recent, or what, 2015. Like, this guy's had that calf issue since he came to Toronto, more or less.
Again, another, just play another through soft tissue injury, right?
Right. So, I mean, I'm hesitant to... To throw that one out there.
Well, you also have to wonder, like, why not over-deliver? Like, do the Jays want to be, like, they're in the headlines every single day. They're in the headlines league-wide. It's everywhere, right? Everyone's talking about the Springer injury every day, but if they would have said off the bat, he's out 4 weeks, I think he gets lost and the Jays get lost in all of this, right? Like, say they come out and say, Springer's out 4 weeks, no idea when he's coming back. I don't think we talk about it at all. I don't think the league discusses it, but it seems like every single big analyst, every outlet has been talking about it every day. We talk about it every day because you have to. It's like we keep getting conflicting reports, right? He's tired. Then it's a scheduled day off. Tired again. Oh, now he's hurt. It was an injury. Now it's an MRI. Like, I don't know. Like, there's either that or there is miscommunication. I've had it. I've had miscommunication between myself. You got to remember, there's more layer. Like, this is not just George Springer and the Toronto Blue Jays. This is George Springer, George Springer's agent, George Springer. Then you have his team. He might have his own medical guy. I would get second opinions a lot. Then you got training staff. You might have one athletic therapist that treats him. Then you might have the doctor. Then you got Charlie, who I don't think is involved at all. And then you got Jay's management. This isn't just a guy that is like, when a player gets injured, it's not as simple as, okay, there's the one party, there's the other party. They figure it out and tell the media. Like, George may be going to the training staff, the medical staff, and saying, I don't think it's too bad. Then you might have the medical staff going to Atkins and saying, well, I think it's just a strain. He could be back soon. Okay, so we're expecting back soon. Well, George is telling the medical staff, I don't think I can go. I think this is really bad. Like, there may be, there. I've seen lots of situations where communication, the lines get mixed up, and that's what it points to in something like this. And we're not going to hear what's going on behind the scenes. Like, we don't know what Springer's agent's telling him, hey, like, really relax, or Springer might be saying, I want to play. I want to get going here. I signed the big contract, and his agent might be telling him, you know, the opposite. So I'm telling you, communication is not, it's not just a black and white thing where it's one player to the team. There's lots of people, a lot of moving parts. And sometimes communication gets mixed up. And then by the time it gets to the media, we're sitting here scratching our head.
Did you see Alek Manoah's line last night for the Buffalo Bisons in their season debut game? This is the Blue Jays' first round pick from 2019 out of the University of West Virginia. He's a 23-year-old. So he's not some 19-year-old kid who's, I mean, he's like a lot of others. He's getting pushed heavily through the minor leagues because last season was a lost year and all of that. 12 strikeouts, no walks, 2 hits.
Oh, wow. He's looking good.
It's not a bad line.
Get him in there.
It's not bad.
Let's get him. What? How much do we need to see? Like, what do you need to see?
I give him a month. Give him at least a month. Yes.
I'm giving him a week. Let's see that for about a week. Well, a month would be a week, technically. Right? How many starts is that? How many starts is a month? Six?
Four or five. Let's revisit this as the weather gets warm.
Yeah.
Knocking on wood that the weather warms up in about a month to 6 weeks.
Wait till we get to Buffalo kind of thing, at least.
I'm telling you right now, and Nate Pearson's another guy to keep an eye on, and he's got to stay healthy, and he's got to put up better numbers than he did in the alternate site games that he was performing in as he was coming off the groin issue. The minor league season just got underway last night. He's going to pitch for the Bisons too. I'm telling you right now, if they can keep Ryu and Ray at the top of that rotation and Matt's figures out how to stop pulling his fastball so that he starts looking like the guy who made the first four starts of the season and not the guy who's made the last two Matt starts, and you're able to add a Pearson and or a Manoah as the summer rolls on, it's a lot to ask the kids, but maybe there's something there. And also, don't discount the possibility of a trade if they're in it, because they're very much in it right now. With everything that's gone on, the Springer injury, the bad defense on the left side of the diamond, the attrition in the bullpen. And
I believe the term is weathering the storm.
Weathering the storm. They're 16-14. Yep. And look at their schedule. Count. They have played the majority of their schedule on the road so far. Like, when they are done with their three-game set in Atlanta next week, their number of road games will far, far exceed the number of home games that they've played. And maybe that's a little less relevant now, given that they don't have a true home. But there's home field advantage every night in baseball because you're hitting last. You can walk it off.
Yeah, they played 11 at home and 19 on the road. 19 and counting.
And they've still got three in Houston and three in Atlanta. So help me with my math.
25.
It'll be 11 at home and 25 on the road at the end of this road trip. So, you know, there's a lot that could go right for this team. They still have holes. They still got to piece some things together. But Alek Manoah is a name you should be keeping track of. Down there at the minor league level, we could be hearing a lot of his name and seeing a lot of him as the summer rolls on. Alvin Williams, former Rap, in an hour. I think we're starting to put a bow on the Raptors season. They lost in overtime to the Wizards last night. They are four games back of the final playoff spot in the Eastern Conference with five to play. I didn't do very good in calculus, but I know enough to know the odds are against them. Elliot Friedman at the top of the hour. You got to come to the defense of his own salad, huh? Darts were thrown. Jack Eichel, a future New York Ranger. We'll get into Austin Matthews, the Maple Leafs as well. And up next, Shai Davidi to follow up on the baseball conversation. We will talk Manoah, etc. The George Springer situation. And does it call high performance the Blue Jays medical staff into question? Shai's next. Texas now, not Dillon. Three-game series with Houston starts tonight. George Springer is back in Houston, but obviously won't play as he's on the injured list, and there's a lot to get to on that front. The Jays, after looking offensively limp in the first two games of the Oakland series, bounce back with a Wednesday night win and a victory yesterday afternoon and split the series. They're two games over 500. They are right in the thick of it. It's far too early to look at the standings, but the American League East is producing some pretty good baseball. The Yankees lost yesterday, but have been better of late. Tampa Bay went to Anaheim and crushed the Angels. Boston is still kicking around. And although the Orioles will stink when it's all said and done, they don't totally stink yet. Shai Davidi is here, Sportsnet's baseball columnist, Blue Jays MLB insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Well, well, well. You know, it's funny, Shai, Josh Donaldson's name was invoked by Hugh Burrell in a conversation on this program about 15 minutes ago as we were discussing George Springer in high performance. And I said, well, Josh Donaldson hit an opening day double for the Minnesota Twins this year. and hobbled into second base on that calf. So I don't know if Josh Donaldson's issues lie solely and completely at the feet of anyone involved with the Toronto Blue Jays. Are there questions to be asked about this HP department vis-a-vis George Springer?
I don't know that we can go that far just yet, but look, I think across the game, there's a bigger question to be asked. It's there's never been more objective data around the sport. There's never been more money spent on sports science and trying to understand the human body. And it's not getting better in terms of keeping guys on the field. And, you know, I think that you can point to some data and say, hey, maybe it's even getting worse. Now, is that simply a byproduct of, you know, a human body being pushed beyond its limits? Is that something in the way players are being groomed on their way up to the major leagues? And once they get to the major leagues, is it simply coincidence? Is it that we're more sensitive to injuries now than we have been in the past? You know, I think those are all fair questions, but you know, this isn't just a George Springer issue. This isn't just a Blue Jays issue. You know, across the sport, there are players going down consistently, and I'm just not sure that, you know, you just think, look at all the investment that's being made into it, and like, you know, we're not, it doesn't feel like we're getting smarter about it.
We understand that we live in a world in a variety of different ways where, and probably quite rightly, we are afraid to speak up on wrongs. I don't know if the 162-game Major League Baseball schedule is a wrong, Shai, but I am assuming that you have, because I have, heard from more than one person who does not want their name attached to this opinion publicly, who have said 162 games in a season isn't just too many, it's far too many. And I'm wondering if the objective data to which you refer, there's never been more of it, is partly what informs that opinion. And I've had conversations with people who hold that opinion, and I say, well, what's your magic number? Is it 144 games? And they even say, well, less. And I say, okay, so what do you mean by that? Would you propose a Major League Baseball schedule that gives every team every Monday and every Thursday off? And that's starting to get down the rabbit hole too far. People haven't necessarily thought about it that deeply. But it's a widely held opinion in the game that 162 games is far, far too much.
Right. And, you know, I can think about having this conversation with Cito Gaston years and years and years ago about, you know, teams should have one day off a week, whether, you know, you either have a Monday off or you have a Thursday off, and you just run it through that way. But every week there's at least one day off to give your players some sort of physical recovery, some sort of a mental break too, not just the physical one. And, you know, there was a belief that that would make a difference. You know, will it ultimately? I don't know, because, you know, some of these things aren't necessarily, you know, workload related, or, you know, they're not directly tied to the fact that you don't have a day off. I don't know that it's going to be a magic bullet, but there's so much wear and tear that, you know, it's at least worth kicking around. Now, you know, will both owners and players be willing to take the revenue hit that accompanies that? I think that's going to be the thing that ultimately kills it. But if you're going to actually think about what's best for player health, and I think you can make a case that, you know, just for the product itself, you know, if you create, a break once a week for teams, you know, there's the mental health side of it that can really be important. You know, you may ultimately end up with a better product.
I got one more. I just want to ask you about George Springer. I was telling Scotty earlier that this is kind of a situation, I think, where communication could be an issue. And I know it's tough on, all of media right now. It's tough on you covering the team. You're not around them, right? I can't imagine what that's like compared to other years, you know, before the pandemic. But Is this one thing where Springer might be telling the medical staff something, then the medical staff's telling Atkins something, or, you know, then Charlie's hearing something different? It just seems like we're getting different answers and mixed messages. And usually when that happens, that's when you, behind the scenes as a player, I can tell you it's not always smooth from what management knows versus what the medical staff knows.
Right. I mean, look, that's a great point, Ziggy. And, you know, I don't know what the communications were like behind the scenes, but just in terms of what was communicated to the public, you know, and I've written about this a few times this week, is that it wasn't clear at all. And until Ross Atkins yesterday said, you know, on the Saturday, George Springer experienced, you know, a mild stretching or cramping that the team believed was associated with fatigue, there wasn't really clarity over what had happened. You know, there was this vague term of fatigue thrown out there, and then it was a planned rest day, and then it was an unplanned rest day, and, you know, he was feeling it, and, you know, it had to be asked what it was. You know, that's not strong on the communication side. And, you know, I think for if you're a fan of the team and you're following along, you're like, what's going on here? You know, to me, what I thought was interesting, and, you know, the Blue Jays have said this a couple times, but Ross Atkins has said that George Springer has a really, really high pain tolerance. And so when he experiences something, he can play through a lot of different things, but maybe that causes him to play through a few things that he shouldn't. And maybe that's what happened in this case a little bit. And he said that, you know, as they try to bring him back this time, they maybe have to factor in his pain tolerance into account a little bit more. And so, you know, I thought that was an interesting thing. And, you know, there's an element of this where, you know, it's still player learning team learning player. And, you know, quads are also tricky. So, you know, it's a pretty difficult mix when you put all those things together. But, you know, the communications, at least to the on a public front, certainly could have been better. And, you know, you would hope that there was more clarity in terms of the way it was handled internally.
With Shai Davidi on leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So I think Steven Matz is scheduled to pitch tomorrow. The Jays, I would imagine, will feel far more comfortable if Matz looks more like the guy who threw the first four starts that he had this season rather than the last two. Ryu is Ryu. It wasn't great yesterday, but it was good enough, and he'll be fine as long as he stays healthy. And Robbie Ray's looked absolutely fantastic. I mean, it's not just that he's throwing 98. It's that he's painting it. He's painting 90. This guy isn't walking anybody, Shy.
Like, three starts without a walk.
What planet are we on? Like, you could count on, well, the Kansas City start was more the norm for him in recent years, but he has found it. Pete Walker, whatever, working magic with him. My question is, Alek Manoah, and there's some video out on social media, I saw it on Twitter, a 12 strikeout, no walk, two hit opening night performance for AAA Buffalo. The presumption that Nate Pearson is going to come up at some point and contribute to this team. Would you, if you're a contending Blue Jays team, whatever that means, contending for the division, contending for a wild card spot, consequential September baseball, would you be comfortable with those two guys rounding out your rotation? And I'm thinking back to the time Juan Guzman in 1991 came up and replaced Dave Steeb, whose back had finally given out. I'm thinking of a still relatively young and relatively inexperienced Marcus Stroman coming back off a torn ACL in the same season to do what he did in September and into October for the 2015 Toronto Blue Jays. Like, it is possible to be a young pitcher, come up with little or no experience, and be highly impactful.
Yeah, and you think about Aaron Sanchez in the bullpen at 2014-15 as well. Yeah, it's not out of the realm at all. You know, I think that the challenge for the Blue Jays is that you don't know what that lost year of games for Alek Manoah means, right? You know, before yesterday, he hadn't pitched above low A. That's his first start above that level. And that's a lot of missed progress. And the stuff is overwhelming, but what happens when, you know, he has to do it every day for a month and a half. And what happens when, you know, he's not feeling it physically on a certain day and he's getting hit around and needs to make adjustments? You know, the Blue Jays don't have that experience. Alek Manoah, not since college does he have that experience. And that's the thing that's what you have to kind of look at and to kind of try to control your excitement a little bit, because you don't want him experiencing that at the big league level for the first time. But the performance to this point from spring training last night has just been so overwhelmingly positive and enticing. It's really hard to pump the brakes on that, right? You just are looking at it and saying, yeah, put this in the rotation right now. I don't need to see another bullpen day. I want that. And I think the Blue Jays are really wrestling with that and are going to have to be wrestling with it for a while, because, you know, Alek Manoah is really good. He's found some things and he's emerging into the type of pitching prospect that they really need to complement Nate Pearson. And as someone who can have the overwhelming stuff you need to compete. So, you know, there's absolutely a pathway. There's absolutely a scenario where that could happen with the both of them. And I think what the Blue Jays have to decide is, you know, what is too much too fast? And that's going to be really tricky for them.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you about Nate Pearson and what do you think the Jays would be like? What's the biggest thing holding the Jays back from bringing him up? I know he was the opening day starter this week in AAA, threw 78 pitches over almost four innings, but obviously battling the injury, you want a player that's 100% healthy. But are you throwing him right into the rotation to bring him up, or are you giving him innings later in a game to kind of get his feet wet?
No, I don't think the bullpen thing is, I know it gets talked about a lot. They are very committed to not doing that to him as a starter. What the Blue Jays really want is that when he comes up, he's locked in, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, you would know about the Ziggy. It's like, you don't want to like come and try to figure out your game at a higher level, right? You want to be able to step in, you know, when you're already feeling good and you know what you need to do to be successful. And, you know, Nate Pearson has been searching for it for a little bit right now. And so, you know, I think the opening day start was a good sign. There were a lot of positives for him there. And I think the Blue Jays want to maybe give him another outing or two to sort of lock that down so that when he comes here, he's already hitting the ground running as opposed to just being in the middle trying to figure things out.
With Shai Davidi on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So you broke the story earlier this week that the Blue Jays will play one final homestand in Dunedin, and then when their next homestand starts on June the 1st, they'll play that in Buffalo, and Buffalo will be their home for an indeterminate period beyond that. I'm not going to ask you if you think the Jays are coming to Toronto at any point this summer. That's not a fair question to ask. How can anybody possibly know? But when you talk to people within the organization, Shai, is there any sense of a realistic hope that it's possible?
You know, it's actually funny because I was talking to somebody yesterday and I jokingly said, well, we'll see you in 2022. And the person said, you know, I wouldn't go that far. And, you know, the person may be a little too optimistic. Said, you know, I would peg it at maybe even 50-50 we're here at some point later in the summer. Now, you know, I think that just judging on the way life is right now for all of us on a daily basis, that feels ridiculously optimistic. It's nice to think that way for sure. But, you know, you look at some of the impact that certain countries have had with vaccine. I mean, you look at what's happening in Israel, and you look at the UK, where, you know, 6,000 people are gathering in nightclubs because of the type of effect that public health measures and vaccinations have had. And, you know, maybe it's not totally out of the realm, right? But, you know, we've gone through this exercise so many times that, you know, you try not to get your hopes up, but there, you know, maybe there is a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. And, you know, if this is going to be realistic, then it means our lives holistically are a whole lot better and a whole lot closer to normal. And so it is nice to think about. And maybe there is just a little bit of light at the end of the seemingly endless tunnel.
We'll leave it there, pal. And good to end on a little note of optimism. A three-game series in Houston, then an off day Monday, three games in Atlanta. And as Ziggy and I were saying, that'll be 25 road games to just 11 home games in the books at the end of this trip. Like, if we understand they're not at Rogers Center, but there is something to home field advantage every day in baseball because you can always walk it off, right? And a lot of home games coming up in the back half of the season. So we'll see. They're 16-14. They're hanging in despite everything that's gone on. The possibilities are endless. We'll chat very soon and look forward to it.
Yeah, agreed with that. And the other thing to keep in mind, you know, we would be 3/4 of the way through the season last year. So
right.
this year is a whole different animal. This is the real deal right now.
You bet. Shai Davidi, Sportsnet's baseball columnist, MLB Blue Jays insider, brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit donvalleynorthlexus.com. Elliot Friedman at the top of the hour. He and Jeff Merrick on the latest edition of 31 Thoughts, the podcast, discussed the possibility of the Rangers making a big splash in the offseason with their new front office. They, according to Elliot, pursued Jack Eichel before. Could they pursue him in a deal with Buffalo again? We'll get into the week that was with the New York Rangers. Auston Matthews scoring his 40th goal in his 49th game last night, and the Maple Leafs teeing things up for the playoffs. Elliot Friedman in 10 minutes. Yay or nay? Hugh will jump in. We'll do a little yay or nay, the three of us, in just a moment. Ready for a little nay? Yay or nay?
I am.
Little yay or nay. All right, let's wire it up. These are hypothetical scenarios. If you agree with it, it's a yay. If you disagree with it, it's a nay. Yay or nay? Ziggy, we'll start with you. Hugh, you piggyback. Between the New York Rangers, their owner, James Dolan, and the NHL Department of Player Safety, someone other than Washington's Tom Wilson looked worse this week.
Yay.
Yay! And
I just think if NHL Player Safety, whoever's making the decision, George Parros, Bettman, you have to give Tom Wilson, you have to suspend him in this situation. And the fact that they didn't, this all got out of hand. We wouldn't have had, I don't think it would have been as bad. I don't think we would have seen, whatever, six fighting majors. I don't think it would have been, you know, I don't think it would have got the attention it got if the league would have just handled it right from the start. So it was outside of Tom Wilson. I'm not saying Tom Wilson was, it was right what he did, but the league has to handle these situations better.
I'm going to go with yay, and it is the Rangers who look the worst out of all of this, not just because of their statement to the NHL calling for the head of George Parros, which they got, you know, fined $250,000 for, but also just the way they cleaned house and tried to blame it on a lack of progress in their rebuild. No, the Rangers looked worse because Tom Wilson was Tom Wilson. He was exactly on brand this week. The Rangers looked the worst.
I'll yay it as well, and I'll say it is James Dolan, the owner of the New York Rangers, and maybe it's because I love Charles Oakley. I've seen the whole act with the Knicks. James Dolan woke up the other day, realized he's running an NHL hockey team, and after issuing, and according to Rick DiPietro on this program yesterday morning, it was James Dolan who issued that statement, not John Davidson or Jeff Gordon. Apparently, those two guys did not want that statement put out there, calling for the head of George Parros. Apparently, he woke up, remembered he runs a hockey team, owns a hockey team as well, and then blew out his front office. Front office that has done a pretty good job, and a front office which had John Davidson, one of the most popular figures in franchise history, or at least over the last 30 or 40 years. It is James Dolan. So we are all yays on that one. George Springer is out yet again. When he returns to the lineup, I will still have doubts about his health. Yay or nay, Hugh?
Yay.
Yay!
Thank you. I will definitely have doubts about his health unless he comes back and proves that he can be 100% healthy for an extended period of time. This is a soft tissue injury, and you just never know about those sorts of things. So the question is, am I concerned? Will I have doubts? Yay.
I'm going to say nay on this one. And it's just
nay.
Thanks, Helena. Is that actually Helena there? Or was that a recording?
That was.
So it's been too many things now. The oblique, the quad, the hamstring. He's in, he's out, he's tired. I think the Jays know they can't hide it anymore. They're going to keep him out until he's healthy now. I think a lot of him trying to come back and get in the lineup was that he wanted to play in Houston against his former team. Now that that's not going to happen, I think he actually waits.
It's really convenient that I actually feel this way because I want to hear this again anyway.
Nay.
Production values here. We spare no expense.
When George Springer is back, he will be 100% healthy. And if he does yank his quad again or yank his groin, soft tissue injuries can come up. He's got to be 100% healthy. This team knows that. They are ripe for criticism if he is not ready to come back and play consistently. And you know, Gregor Chisholm and others have referred to this. We've talked about it. He can't come back until they're confident he can play a defensive position, whether that's center field or right field. If you're not ready to defend, you're not ready to DH. And I think that's the lesson learned out of what went down with George Springer over the last week, week and a half. When we look back on the career of Albert Pujols, it's a Hall of Fame career. But his time with the LA Angels, which dates back to 2012, was underwhelming. Yay or nay?
Yay.
Albert Pujols released.
Yes.
Yeah. By the LA Angels late yesterday.
Yay, it was underwhelming with
Yay!
The Angels. Only because he set the bar so damn high in St. Louis, so almost anything was going to be underwhelming. 9 All-Star appearances with the Cardinals, only 1 with the Angels, so yay, underwhelming.
I'll jump in and say yay to that too, because I got a quick thought on it. It's the contract along with Prince Fielder's that solidified that, plus all the sports science and objective data that's come out that has solidified the fact that no 31 or 32 year old free agent will ever get a 10-year contract ever again.
Agreed.
He's a first ballot inner circle Hall of Famer for his time in St. Louis. He padded the stats with the Angels, and otherwise it was underwhelming because, as you said, the bar was set so high.
Yeah, I'm yay as well. A contract like that, they never end well. It's not just baseball. It's every sport. This would have happened a lot sooner if it wasn't Pujols, right? I think he gets released or cut or DFA'd way sooner than this, but they held on as long as they could. Maybe there was an issue in the room there where, you know, guy gets sat out, doesn't like it, but I'm going with yay.
Remember, the St. Louis Cardinals wanted to keep Albert Pujols after the 2011 World Championship. They won the World Series in 2011. They wanted to keep him. Angels gave him 10 and 250, and it's like, nope. And that's why the St. Louis Cardinals are a consistently well-run organization that even when they're not a playoff team, they're in the conversation. Last year, if Austin Matthews stayed healthy and scored 50 goals, that would be more impressive this season than Connor McDavid potentially reaching 100 points. Yay or nay, Ziggy?
I think that Matthews staying healthy and scored 50 goals, it is a lot more impressive than the 100 points. So I am going to stay yay.
Yay!
I think points are great. But I need to break down, how is a player getting points? Are they second assists? Are they power play points? How many power play goals does Matthews have this year? How many power play points does Matthews have this year? Not as many as in prior years. So if you really break down Matthews and the fact that if he stayed healthy and did get to 50, I think it's a lot more impressive.
I'm going to say yeah, yay. I was going to say yeah, but we're not playing yeah or nay. We're playing yay or nay. So yay. The 40 goals, if this was 40 goals, I would say McDavid's 100 points is more impressive. But if 50 goals in 56 games, yay, that is more impressive.
Right. And I'll say yay as well, only because Austin Matthews has only missed 4 games this season. It's not like he got robbed of a dozen games. That would be 2.5 goals a game, like 10 goals in 4 games. to get the extra 10 you would need to get to 50. I understand he's got three games left to play this season if he skates in all of them and whatever. But, yeah, it certainly would be more impressive. Yay or nay, do we want to hear the nay sound one more time? The answer to that is yay, so let's play the nay.
Nay.
Thank you very much. You never know when you're going to become a drop on this show. Elliot Friedman coming up in just a moment. Here's what we're talking about this morning on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Auston Matthews, his 40th goal scored in his 49th game played this season. Leafs 5, Habs 2 down at Scotiabank Arena last night. Jack Campbell, a relatively quiet night. 19 saves for his 16th win. He's got a record of 16-2-2 between the pipes for the Maple Leafs this year. The Blue Jays earned the split of their four-game series in Oakland with a 10-4 victory over the Athletics yesterday. Marcus Semien had a four-hit day, which included a home run. He also scored three runs. Bo Bichette and Kevin Biggio also had three-hit days in support of Hyunjin Ryu, who went five innings enough to secure the victory. And the Raptors are all but dead now. The math is just not their friend. They lose 131-129 in overtime to the Washington Wizards. The Raps are four games back of 10th place Washington, the final playoff spot in the East, with five games to play. You count that up. It is not looking good. Elvin Williams, Sportsnet Raptors and NBA analyst, will join us in about a half hour to, I guess, dissect the Raptors season, if you will. Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada. The NHL on Sportsnet, 31 Thoughts, the podcast, which he co-hosts with Jeff Merrick, 31 Thoughts, the column, which he posts each and every week on sportsnet.ca, is back and in the saddle. Good morning, sir. It's been a while. Missed you.
Oh, 1 week turned to two pretty quick. How does that happen?
Oh.
I thought about you guys and said, I need another week.
You know, waiting for the follow-up there. Elliot, just with a short sentence. Before we get into everything that's happened this week and stuff has happened.
Yeah.
We want to give you the opportunity to defend yourself.
So ridiculous.
We want to give you the opportunity to defend yourself. We were talking about John Torrey's haircut about an hour ago and how it's kind of puffing out. And we were wondering whether Hugh could grow his sides out, do the comb over, cover the look. Give you an opportunity here to defend yourself. Elliot, let's play the clip. You or Ziggy, how long would it take you to grow that thing out and pull the comb over to get that thick, luscious look that John Torrey is rocking right now?
You never know how thick it is. You got to see somebody in person. Yeah. Look at Elliot Friedman. He looks like he's got a lot of hair. I think if we take a little peek behind the curtain, I don't think it's as lush as we think.
Elliot, would the truth come out in a windstorm?
That's so ridiculous.
Would a truth come out in the windstorm or not?
I had 40 good years. I say it that way. You know, actually, I got to tell you, I think it looks really good. But yeah, just on top, it comes out everywhere, except even places that you don't want, except right on the top of your head.
Yeah, it's the old George Costanza line: ear puberty, nose puberty, it never ends in middle age. all right, let's get into the business of the week, and we're not ignoring Austin's 40th goal. We'll get to that, and the Leafs tee up for the playoffs here, and how they might approach the final three games of the regular season. The Freddie Anderson situation as well, but the New York Rangers dominated the chatter. Yeah. And you're on Hockey Central yesterday talking to Jeff Merrick and the guys, and Chris Drury is the president and general manager of this team. First of all, Elliot, is that absolutely 110% how it's going to be? Or is there a possibility that there's more influence of a Mark Messier entering this situation at some point?
I think it's Drury's team.
Okay.
You know, Drury had some leverage here. You know, they kind of said to him, we'd like you to take over. And, you know, I think that, first of all, he's the guy they wanted. And secondly, he could say, look, I'd like it to kind of be this way, president and GM, and he got it. I think Sather his influence is not to be underestimated. I think he played a part in what happened. And also, you know, he was there yesterday as part of the media conference on Zoom. You know, that is significant to me. The Messier thing, I don't exactly know what to make of it yet.
I do think the organization is considering a coaching change. I don't know if that means for sure it happens, but I know they are considering the possibility of it. That will be, as the owner said yesterday, Drury's call. I'm not sure that that means that Messi is going to be the guy or he's going to come in a different role, but I think this is Drury's team to shape with help that every general manager gets, and I think it remains to be seen what that help is going to look like.
So James Dolan is better known as the owner of the Knicks and is considered nuts. Was any of this knee-jerk with Davidson Gorton? Because, like, if you look at the work Jeff Gorton has done with this franchise, and I'm not so much necessarily thinking 2015 onward, kind of from the letter, right? Remember the letter they put out 3 years ago to their season's ticket holder saying, look, we expect us to stink for a bit because we're tearing this down and building it back up. If you look at some of the work he's put in, the draft picks, the acquisition of Adam Fox, the passing of the torch in the crease, like, they've got a really good young collection of talent here. And they also brought John Davidson back only two calendar years ago, Elliot. This is one of the most popular faces in the franchise's recent history, from playing for them, the TV analysis he did on MSG. They lured him back from Columbus. Like, where did the breakdown happen?
The breakdown happened over the last month or so. You know, obviously, because of everything that happened this week, we wondered if the statement had something to do with it or just the overall Tom Wilson situation. You know, like everyone else, I thought that because of the timing, but the more we began to understand, we realized that wasn't the case. And, you know, I will say this. I spoke to a general manager yesterday who said, you know, I before Jim Dolan's interview came out with Larry Brooks in the New York Post, and he said, look, I read your blog yesterday, and no matter what you say, I'll never believe it doesn't have something to do with the Tom Wilson thing. And, you know, I'd heard it didn't. And then Brooks and Dolan did that interview. It came out, and Jim Dolan explained that the reason it happened at the time it did was that he felt the jury had to be involved in the end of year interviews, and their last two games are on the road, and he felt that he had to do it at home. So there is an explanation there. Dolan did confirm what we'd been hearing, that this evolved over the past month. I think it is knee jerk in the sense it's relatively recent, and he kind of was talked into it. But he had been contemplating it over the last little while. The word I'd heard was that he was dissatisfied with the fact they didn't make the playoffs this year. He thought it was time that they get back into the playoffs, and he kind of confirmed that. He is quoted as saying that there are owners and other people who said to him, you have a better team and should be in the playoffs. But it's obvious that he felt whatever it is missing, that cohesiveness and togetherness, and he decided to make the change. Now, I think people were stunned. I was stunned. Other people around the league were stunned. I think Gorton and Davidson were stunned. You know, the Sather thing is really interesting. I think he played a role here. It's tough to say on a scale of 1 to 10 what that role was, but you know, the other thing about Dolan, you talk about his NBA stewardship. You know, I called a guy I used to know when I covered the NBA, and I said, you know, tell me what to make of this here. And he goes, we've been wondering what to make of this for 20 years. Welcome to the way this goes here. But one of the things that he did tell me and remind me is that if Dolan appreciates your counsel and believes in your counsel, he will listen to it even if you're not kind of in the number one position anymore. And even though Sather wasn't running the team or running the business like he was before, he was still around. And Dolan listens to people in that way. And I think that played a part here.
Yeah, we had Rick DiPietro on. He said that, well, the optics of this looks like, you know, the Rangers released that statement Yeah. To, you know, and it was like Bettman or the league saying, hey, like whoever put this out there, you're out, right? That was kind of the first.
Yeah, but those guys wouldn't have anything to do with that, Mike. They weren't. No,
yeah,
they,
well, pair.
Gorton and Davidson, they had nothing to do with that statement. Well, that was all the owner.
Well, DiPietro said there was rumor floating around that they actually told Dolan, don't send that statement out. So it was Dolan that actually wanted the statement out there.
Yes.
And that Gorton and Davidson said, no, I wouldn't do it. And who, I mean, once you turn on your owner like that, what if he's just like, okay, enough's enough. These guys aren't on my, these guys don't want to do what I want to do. You're out of here. I feel like the timing's so strange.
The timing is really strange, but you know, he did explain it. You know, he did that. He had a legitimate answer for that question. You know, I do think that, you know, that's, I do think that the answer to that question is legit. And I think people will buy it as legit. Look, I do agree that they didn't support the statement. I don't think they wanted any part of it. I could see someone like Jim Dolan saying, well, if you're not with me, you're against me. Goodbye. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's the full picture in this particular case.
With Elliot Friedman on leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, what is your understanding of the internal league thoughts and feelings about the Rangers statement calling for George Parros' head and suggesting that a lack of a suspension for Tom Wilson for the antics on Monday night was a dereliction of duty? Did it seriously ruffle feathers behind the scenes?
Oh yeah, they didn't like it. You know, they didn't like that at all. And you know, I think they're like, you just have to understand the way that leagues kind of feel about things. It's all about protecting the shield. Now, I think they missed on Wilson. I think they should have suspended him for a game or two, just found a way to do it. I don't think that's something you want in your league. I think Wilson's got to control his temper. And I also think that, you know, a superstar player got injured here. And I realize it's not the biggest injury and it's not the most important time because the Rangers are out of the playoffs, but he got hurt and it could have been horrible. And I felt they missed the boat. And I don't, and I know there's other teams and executives and players who felt the same way, but I think those other teams and executives didn't think it was acceptable for Dolan to take the run at the league in Parros that they did. And I think what you're seeing now is that even if people publicly disagreed with what the league didn't do in Wilson's case, they don't support that. You know, it was unbelievable. I mean, the week was right out of the WWE. It was not very NHL and what we're used to. I mean, we'll look back at this craziness and say, holy smokes, like this is not the way the NHL we're used to covering. It was very different this week. You know, someone said to me, if you wanted to get rid of George Parros or try to build up a case to have the league get rid of George Parros, that's 100% the way you don't do it. And that the commissioner in the league office will back him even further now because Bettman won't want the impression that he got bullied into making a change or he won't want to be backed into a corner about this. So, you know, I think that they will rally around it publicly. They will say that that's not going to make a change and we support Parros, which is what they'll do. And I know that people just didn't, they thought it was, whatever you feel about, you know, the decision, they thought that was way over the top. And it kind of was, really. Yeah. It was way over the top.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with you on the league backing George Parros now. Like, they'll go out of their way. But do you think that the setup right now is the right way to do it with a former player making the decisions? Like, if they were going to make changes, would you be okay with a three-person panel? Would you be more comfortable if it was not a former player or some kind of term limit where a guy can only come in and do 2-3 years? Or do you just, you like the way the setup is right now?
You know, I'm willing to listen. You know, I mean, look, like the Players Association has a role in this too. They play a part in the setup of this whole thing. They don't make the decision, but it is collectively bargained. So, you know, the players do have a say in this in their own way. You know, I've asked about that before. Like, do you take it independent? Do you what kind of situation do you want here? And I think the league and the players want the kind of control over it that they have to some point. There is a person in charge, Peros, who makes the decisions. But like I said, it is collectively bargained. I don't think they want it to be not belong, quote unquote, belong to them in that way. Like, I'm willing to listen to anything, but let's be honest, Mike, no matter what happens, it's like awards voting. No matter who's in charge of it or who does it, mm-hmm. people are going to hate it. Yeah. It's always going to be the case. Like, it's the most stressful and probably worst job in sports. Like, everyone who's done it, and you've ever heard Berkey talk about it, you get burned out in that job. Burke got burned out. Colin Campbell got burned out. Shanahan got burned out. Stephane Quintal got burned out. And I'm sure Peros gets burned out too. But the other thing too is, if you really look at it, and I know a lot of people don't, but I've looked at it this way. The league has actually done a decent job of making it more consistent, in the sense that when an incident happens, you can reach out to people and say, okay, what's the history of this particular incident? And they can tell you, okay, these are the most recent incidents that happened similar to this. This is if a person got suspended, and this is how many games they got. They have done that for the last 20 years pretty well. Like, you can get those answers pretty quickly. I think the thing that – so this week, even – like, if you look back to this year, Wilson's early suspension, the 7-gamer, Mike, and you played, so you know this. They suspended him 7 games for boarding. There has never been, until then, a boarding suspension where someone was hit like that. All boarding suspensions were from behind. And the one on Carlo was not from behind. There were people who felt that that should not have been a suspension, because Carlo should have known he was coming. And, you know, like, they kind of changed their philosophy. They interpreted a rule differently that they'd never done before. And initially, I didn't think he was going to get suspended, because nobody's been suspended for that. And then they kind of found a way. I think they said, this is Wilson. He's too dangerous, and he's got to learn. We're going to interpret the rules differently. Now, on Monday night, you know, someone said to me immediately, we've never had a suspension for anything like this. And my point was, if you're going to interpret the rules differently the first time, you could have done it here. But they decided not to. And so I kind of understood why it happened. So to me, I think the issue is not necessarily who's in charge or what's in charge. It's that they're pretty rigid in the way that they look at past incidents and precedents. And from a legal point of view, that is the proper way to do things. I felt that if they could interpret differently a few months ago, they could have done it again here too. No matter what happens, yeah. Mike, someone's going to hate it.
Yeah, I was surprised with the Carlo Wilson suspension, the 7 games. I'd also heard that George Peros didn't want to give anything by the rule book, and that the people above him said, no, the optics of this are bad. We're throwing the book at them. That's kind of how I heard it all play out. But I mean, who knows?
I know. I'm going to tell you this. Yeah. Like, I'm going to start calling this Xenon. But I do believe in that case, it went from nothing happening to something very big happening. So something did change. There's no question about it.
With Elliot, and I go ahead, Zeke. Yeah.
Oh, I just want to add one more to that. Yeah, and I just think that you mentioned Brent Shanahan. Why don't they go back to the player safety coming out with a video for all these suspensions or not, or the big ones that aren't suspended?
You know, they have occasionally done that before, show reasons as to why something didn't happen. I don't know why it didn't happen this time. I didn't ask. But, you know, I mean, maybe they should do it anyway, Ziggy, but to be honest, in this particular case, I don't think it's like, have you ever seen a player suspended for the act of what Wilson did to Panarin?
No, I haven't. And I think it didn't look good, but I told Scotty, I had that happen to me playing. I know I played, it's been a while, but a number of times, like I thought it was suspendable. He should have got at least a game or two, but at the same time, I told Scotty, I'm like, if that's not Panarin, like, is this still a big issue? I didn't like the Buznevich hit on the ground, but I don't know. Like, this kind of happens a lot, or am I missing something?
Well, it does happen a lot, but and it's never been suspended before, and I think that's the reason. But like I said, they interpreted things differently once. They can do it again. Like, you're right. It's people are talking about it because it's Panarin and he got injured. But you know what? That's life. In the criminal justice system, sometimes cases turn out to be convicted because of A, the damage you did to someone. You know, we all know that people say that to me occasionally, like, oh, well, it's only a penalty because he got in. It's only a punishment because he got injured. So, well, that's life. If you, the more you hurt someone, the more you get prosecuted for it. Mm-hmm. And also, yes, it's Panarin, it's high profile, but it's also Wilson and it's high profile. And, you know, like I said in my notes this week, I used to have a terrible, terrible temper. And my father would always say to me, if you don't handle that, you suffer the consequences. And I did at times in life. And I think that's fair. I do. I think, look, it's protect the shield, right? You gotta do what's best for your league. I just don't think what happened on Monday night was good for the league. And the other thing about Wilson is, in that game on Wednesday, and some people didn't like that I showed this. They thought it was, you know, the wrong time. That's fine. People are entitled to their opinions. There was a play where Buchnevich came around the Washington net with the puck, and Wilson was coming down from the blue line. It was almost the same as the Carlo play, really. And he could have pummeled him, and he pulled up and didn't do it. So that says to me that there's a player here who understands that there's a line and at times recognizes there's a line. He has to be taught that you can't lose your composure and lead to what could be the worst case scenario. And that's what happened Monday night. And if he has to keep being reminded of that, they have to do it because he's got the ability in him to adjust and say, I shouldn't be doing this.
Elliot Friedman with us on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meat. You were on Hockey Central yesterday talking to Jeff Merrick and the guys about the possibility of the New York Rangers, now with Chris Drury in charge, wanting to make a big-time splash in the offseason, take that next step toward being a playoff team. Could they go after Jack Eichel of the Buffalo Sabres? And, Elliot, you talked about how the Rangers made an offer last offseason.
Yeah.
Depending on where Buffalo is with all of this, and Eichel's been hurt for a lot of the year, he's got 5 years left on his contract after this season.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a prime hockey player when he's healthy. Do you think the Sabres would actually engage and listen on this thing now, just given what a mess they're in? And the New York Rangers, man, they're Broadway. They want to make a splash.
I do think it's possible. I don't think the Rangers will be the only team that asks about it. I'm sure just about, you know, one of the things around the deadline is, you know, the Rangers did listen on Eichel, even though he wasn't playing. I think they just wanted to get an idea of what the market value is. The difference between now and a year ago is, you know, the Rangers made them think, but the Sabres just weren't ready to do it. They're like, no, we're not ready to do this yet. Now I think they're at least ready to do it. I'm sure they will, A, take Eichel's health into consideration, B, take it, the lack or the market, not lack, because there is plenty of a market, the market into consideration, what the offers are. I'd be curious. I think the Sabres were reluctant to trade him there too. I think if, you know, they trade Eichel, I think they'd rather send him somewhere where their fans can't so easily see how well he does in that kind of a marketer that he doesn't come back to Buffalo to torture them five times a year. That kind of a thing is all in play, but I do think the Rangers will look at something. They've got a lot of cap room. Now, they will have some big decisions to make in the not-too-distant future. Adam Fox's contract, Zibanejad's future. But I do believe that they will contemplate some big stuff. And, you know, I think I also wonder, you know, specifically, what does Dolan think they're missing? Are we talking about, like, a deterrence for players like Wilson going out and getting a guy or two that handles that? Or is he also talking, about just some other general big splashes? I think we're all going to be curious to see that.
We'll leave it there, Elliot. Thanks for this. Good to chat again. And we'll do it again next Friday.
All right. I can't wait. I hope,
I'm just jealous, Elliot. Elliot, I'm just jealous with the hair. You know that, right?
You know, I don't take any offense, but I do lay in the weeds, and when the time comes, I will have my revenge.
Oh.
I'm just jealous.
Friedman's revenge. We will count the days, and we'll keep the radars up. Thanks, pal.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
You bet. Elliot Friedman. Sportsnet NHL Insider, Hockey Night in Canada. You'll see him tomorrow night, 31 Thoughts, the podcast with Jeff Merrick in the column on sportsnet.ca. Well, there you go. We must have set some kind of record. We wanted to get to the Leafs and Matthews, but there's about 19 different angles to the week Rangers have had. It's the reality of the situation.
Yeah, it's a crazy situation in New York. I'm still shocked they fired Davidson and Gordon. I like the makeup of this team. I think a couple tweaks. I don't think they're just a playoff team. I think they can be a serious consideration out of the East. You add a Simmons Hyman type. You get your goaltending situation figured out. The team gets a year older. Rangers could be a good team. So I was surprised with everything, but with Dolan.
Wayne Simmons' name came up in our conversation yesterday about the Rangers, right? Based on the Mark Messier comments, you got to win in the alleyway as well as with skill. And now when you said Zach Hyman's name there, I got to admit my heart dropped.
Down into
my stomach, but it's a reality, right? I mean, he's exactly the type of player that a Rangers team could benefit from. Well, let's be honest, he'd help a lot of teams. The Raptors drop one in overtime. They got a game-tying buzzer three from Freddie VanVleet in regulation to send the game to overtime, and then just fell short to the Wizards. Four games back of Washington with five left to play. Only the math is left as the outstanding nail for the coffin. The Raptors season coming to a close. Pascal Siakam saying, yeah, we're getting booed at home every night. It hasn't been a pleasant year from the Raps. So what are, or for the Raps and from the Raps. So what are the takeaways? What are some of the gains? What are some of the changes that this team will need? Elvin Williams will answer those questions and more next. Well, it's pretty much said and done for the Raptors now. They got the three at the buzzer from Freddie VanVleet to push that game with the Wizards last night into overtime, and then they just fall short 131-129, and the math is the enemy now. Four games back of 10th place Washington for a spot in the play-in tournament, five games to play. Don't need an abacus, Siggy, to count it up now. It's over. It's essentially over. And it's probably a good thing that it is. It's been a tough year down in Tampa, et cetera, et cetera. Pascal Siakam saying after the game last night, look, we're just used to being booed at home. Let's get this world back to normal, get the Raptors back into Toronto and see what next season brings. Elvin Williams is here, a former Raptor, NBA on Sportsnet analyst, to not just break the season down, but also to discuss individual player performance and what he's seen. Alvin, it's always great to have you on, and I'm interested in your perspective on this as a former player. Coaches and players are trying to win every single night. Sometimes it's the front office, as a failing season is dwindling, that has a lot of say on who plays and who doesn't on any given night. And I think you could make the argument that the Raptors have not, on any given night over the last month, month and a half, necessarily put out the best lineup. And so it's a balance between getting guys experience, trying to win, maybe a bit of a modified tank. As a player, when you're looking around and some of your best guys aren't available, what's the message you take, and how typically does a room feel about it?
I mean, it is, it's interesting. It's an interesting dynamic because the way sports are now, and players do have a lot of control in what they're going to do and how long they're going to do it. But as you said, the management does have a big part. And when you construct a team, you have an idea of where you want to go with that team. Is this a championship team? Is this a rebuilding team? Is this a competitive team? Whatever the case may be. And when it comes down to it, you're going to need everyone all the time. You know, it's not going to be half and half. It's not going to be off and on. You're going to need everyone involved and invested in order to make that true push. And that's pretty much what it comes down to. And right now, the message that you see, if you're playing, you're just out there playing. And whoever's out there, you're just still doing what you have to do. But if you look deeply into it, you understand that, you know, this is not a true push to win anything significant, you know, as far as, you know, going to the playoffs or a championship, because of the availability of certain players and how consistent one lineup is. If you have a management that's, you know, constantly making changes or things like that due to, you know, personnel, or it could be injury, it could be a lot of things that go on through the course of the season. But when it comes down to availability, which are consistent players or your most constant players, then you get a message that this is not going to be the type of season that we're projecting.
And does that bother you? I mean, I know it's specific to each individual, but can that have a negative effect on a room?
Oh yeah, for sure. But you know what? Once again, our NBA is different. You know, it's not uncommon to have your best players out at any given time, right? It's one of those things that it's a conversation between the coach, the sports science division, management, and the player, I'm sure. So it's not uncommon. Like back in the day when I played, it was uncommon to have your best players not available for you every night. It was uncommon if there's big games and your best players aren't playing, then, you know, that wasn't something that was typical. But now it is, whether it's rest, whether it's whatever going on, it's just a different NBA that we have to get adjusted to with that mindset and the approach to game after game. You hear players now and, you know, the conversation saying how many games is too many games and things like that. So there's a deep conversation. And so I think it's going to be something that the NBA is going to have to address, because ultimately, you know, the NBA want to make money, and the guy, people that we want to see are the best players and the best team. So, you know, that's something that has to be addressed. So it doesn't bother me because I understand the shift in the sport now.
In a must-win game last night, you don't have Kyle Lowry available. Since the trade deadline and not moving him, how confusing was it for you with what the Raptors did after the trade deadline? Like, were they trying to win? Weren't they trying to win? How did you interpret what happened with the Raptors?
I mean, as you guys mentioned early on, every time you step out there on the court, you try to win as a player and as a coach. The circumstances sometimes do not allow you to win, depending on, once again, availability, the approach, and everything like that. But the thing is, you got to have an understanding of where we want to go. And it's confusing, right? It's confusing. And like you said, after the trade deadline, you keep a Kyle Lowry, and now you're thinking, all right, this team is going to try to make this last push. But then you got to also realize it probably wasn't the right time for that move. So once again, I feel like personally, the Raptors, it wasn't top priority to continue to make a push for the playoffs. All right. I don't know what the reason behind that was, but it wasn't a top priority. But it is confusing sometimes. But once again, this is the world we live in with sports. These players now, it's like a 9-to-5. You got your vacation days, you got your sick days, and you just don't know who's going to show up at times. So that's where we are.
With Elvin Williams on leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So Pascal goes 44 and 11 boards last night for a double-double, has the ball in his hand with the chance to win the game in overtime and clanks it off the glass. And so it's really strange to try to assess his season. It seems like he's had a lot of bad luck, a lot of missed shots, last-second opportunities to change the course of games, and yet the numbers are there. How would you assess Pascal's season?
It was an up and down season. It was the first time, and I'm always going to put something positive on it, it was the first time he's been in this position, you know, to lead a team, I think, you know, as the quote unquote, the number one guy. He's had opportunities to win games. He had the ball in his hands late, and it all going to depend on this season, what happens later on. Are the lessons he learned or the situations or experiences that he experienced this year, is that going to help him? And I'm inclined to say it is, because once you get these opportunities, once you've been put in these positions and you've done it already, it takes reps. You got to go over it and over it again. And it was trying. This was a tough season for everyone, especially him. But I feel like he's picked it up. I feel like he's gotten better over the course of the season. I feel like he's had some issues with the coach. So it's something else internally there, because he's been suspended a game. So it's been one of those seasons where he's experienced a lot. And if the number one guy and a franchise guy and a big money guy, you go through these things. And I think the sooner he goes through these things, the better it'll be for him in the long run. So I give him an up and down season, but I take a positive out of this, because it's a hell of an experience that he's never experienced in his career yet.
Yeah, it's tough, right? Because crunch time this year, he's 14 for 40, where last season, 27 for 52. And it's like, what happened? What was the difference? I know we saw, like you mentioned, the Nick Nurse stuff, but for a franchise player and for a guy you want to name your true number one, you're not going to win when you have seasons like this, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, the lucky thing is, well, not the lucky thing. It's just, once again, the situation now, the best teams are not going to have, you know, your true number one. You can get away with three guys that fulfill a top-notch role. Like you hear about your big three. It's not going to be one guy. And Pascal's not ready to be that franchise guy this season. He wasn't that guy. The team wasn't built for him to be that guy. This is all new experiences. But once again, I think what he's experienced this year will help him become the player that, you know, we all would like him to be, quote unquote. But I really feel like he's a heck of a player. He brings value to any team in the NBA. And it's no accident that he's had the success that he's had as his little bit of time that he's had. So he's continued to grow. He's still very young. And these stats, we can make stats look however we want them to look. But at the end of the day, I think the experiences that he's experienced are so valuable that it's going to make him a much better player. And he's going to have a lot to give Toronto or whoever, whatever team he plays in the future.
Elvin Williams with us on leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. A couple of other league-wide issues that we'd love to get your thoughts on. So LeBron clearly is not going to be 100% with that ankle, and AD is still having issues with the back. And I mean, it's likely that he's going to return to the lineup here pretty quickly, not miss much time, but I think it's impossible for anybody to believe he's going to be anywhere close to 100% come playoff time. The Lakers are in an absolute dogfight right now to avoid the play-in tournament. This is in the Western Conference. This, like, they're hugely vulnerable here right now. So Elvin, presuming that is the case, how would you handicap that conference's favorites? You got Utah 1, Phoenix 2, the Clippers 3, the Nuggets without Jamal 4. Who do you think is most likely to come out of the West?
Man, it's so up and down. I have no clue. I like the Phoenix Suns, but I just feel like, I guess traditionally and, you know, just my way of being, they don't have enough experience across the board to be in this position. But the times are so different. We saw last year with the bubble. We saw so many things. It's such an adjustment that it's not an even playing field for it. Well, I guess it's more even because it's consistent. If this whole time affects everyone. But, you know, I like Phoenix Suns, but I feel like this could be the Clippers year. I feel like they have the most consistent, you know, lineup right now when you got Kawhi Leonard back in there. So I think he's ready to go. Paul George is playing at a great rate. I like the addition to what they brought with Rondo that will settle the team. And they still have some other good pieces around that can knock down some shots and things like that. So, you know, it takes a process. So I think the Clippers could be prime. But you got to look at Utah the way they've been playing all year, right? They've been playing good team basketball. And they're still playing great basketball without Donovan Mitchell. So how does that look when he's in a playoff position? So I'm either going with Utah or the Clippers. I know I'm playing a fence. I'm playing a fence right now, but mm-hmm. I would have to go with either of those two teams right now, the way it looks.
Well, this is digressing and partly personal for me. Like, I loved the Phoenix Suns as a little kid, pre-Charles Barkley. Like,
wow.
Like, Tom Chambers, Jeff Hornacek, Dan mm-hmm. Marley, mm-hmm. like, and then Chuck. And I'll never forget the 1993 NBA Finals and the Paxson shot and all of that. There's a part of me, though, aside from the whole Phoenix angle, that wants to see Chris Paul run it really, really deep in the playoffs, Elvin, because this guy for 15 years, it doesn't matter where he plays, he wins. Yeah. He shows up somewhere and that team gets immediately better. And he's considered one of the greatest point guards of all time. And yet I don't think he's celebrated enough.
Yeah. And no, you're right. And it's funny how the narrative changes a bit, because I remember the back in the days when, you know, he was with the Clippers and they had the lob squad and the mob lob and all that stuff. And he was the point guard, but they could never just get past the hump. And it was, he faced a lot of criticism. You know, that team faced a lot of criticism. I know they had some dissension amongst that team, but he goes to a place like Houston. Then he goes to OKC. Now he's at Phoenix. And now you start giving him his value, like, oh, he's not the hard-nosed, emotional guy that cannot get along with his teammates or demand too much for his teammates or shut teammates out. He's the guy that brings people together and get them to win. So I love the fact that he's able to play long enough and show his true worth. And I'm with you. I love the fact that what he brings to the table is leadership. And that's a quality that the NBA do not have, because the league is so young and it's not a lot of veterans that play at Chris Paul level that has that experience. So I love the fact that's what he brings. I think it's great for the NBA, and I think it's great for any team that he goes to, because he brings so much value, as you mentioned.
Well, Elvin, the Raps will play out the string here, and then we'll do the full postmortem, and we'll count on you for that. There'll be a lot of conversation about what's next for Kyle and where this whole roster goes and what this team looks like when they report to training camp next fall. Thanks so much for this. Have a great weekend, and you know we'll be calling on you soon.
Thanks for having me, guys. Have a good one.
You bet. Elvin Williams, former Raptor and Sportsnet NBA analyst, Raptors analyst. Yeah. Suddenly, it's funny. It's funny, Zig. Like, some teams just have that reputation. Doesn't matter what league it is, right? Like, the LA Lakers, just because the yellow and purple, you're like, well, surely to God, they're not going to just fall flat on their face. But if LeBron has 1.5 legs and AD is 60% at best, anything is possible.
I'd love for them to finish 7th or 8th. Oh, my goodness. Watch them play in just because of what LeBron had to say in the, you know, with the play in and how it was okay before, but now that he's in the mix, the play in, you know, it might be the Lakers, but I'm not a big fan of the play in. I liked it before, but after watching last year, the NHL, the NBA now, I get it, but it's, I don't think it's just tough, right? Because it's tough on 7 and 8, right? You play so hard to finish, you know, obviously you want to finish as high as possible, but this team 7 and 8, it's difficult because you can just be knocked out quickly by a team that didn't have a good regular season, but all of a sudden they may get hot for 5 days and you're out.
Yay or nay as we head out the door. And even if you think it's a yay, I kind of just want you to say nay. Auston Matthews plays tomorrow night, or does he get his first little shot of rest here after scoring his 40th goal?
I have no idea, because I'm not in with the sports science. I have no idea what it's going to say now and how often you should play. I still think he plays. So I'm, yeah, he,
I, yay!
I think he does.
Okay. That disappoints me.
If he goes and says, like, I want to get to 45, like, he may go in and talk to Keith, or Keith might pull him over, say, hey, I'm going to sit you. And he's like, no, I want to play. Like, that conversation probably happens. And a guy like Auston Matthews, why stop? Like,
Some guys want to sit out. I'm a player that I'd want to sit out at the end of the season if I was playing a lot of minutes, especially in a condensed schedule. But there are some players that play every, they want to play every day. Optional skates, they go on the ice. Pre-game skates, they go on. I feel like Austin's that guy that he wants to get out there.
Well, I came to you not necessarily for actual true analysis of the situation. I was just hoping you'd say nay. So I'll say nay since you didn't say nay, just because I wanted to hear this.
Nay.
Nay. Oh, we got
to go with that one for
a
now.
New show all drop. Right. Oh, new yeah. Drop. Yay or nay. That's love our nay. It. We're back Monday morning, 6 o'clock. Good show is next. Have a great Mother's Day weekend.
Nay.